This is 89.9 KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Time now for your weekend film reviews. In the mix today, we have an action flick featuring a stuntman who looks an awful lot like Ken from the Barbie movie. We also have a cyberpunk animated mystery set on Mars and a Japanese movie about environmental destruction. Joining me now is William Bibbiani, film critic for The Wrap and co-host of the critically acclaimed network. Hi, Bibbs.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Ahoy, ahoy. And Monica Castillo is a freelance film critic who writes for The New York Times, RogerEbert.com, and The Village Voice. Hi, Monica.
Hello.
Hello. Well, first up, let's talk about The Fall Guy. It stars Ryan Gosling as a Hollywood stuntman, and he's working on a film directed by his ex-girlfriend, who's played by Emily Blunt. All of a sudden, the film is in turmoil when the lead actor goes missing.
Tom Ryder. The biggest action star on the planet is missing. You need to bring him back, or Jodie's movie is dead.
Why me?
You're a stuntman. Nobody's gonna notice you. That's your job. No offense.
I mean, some taking.
You find Ryder, save Jodie's film, you get the love of your life back.
Monica, the director is David Leitch, who I guess was a stuntman, actually, in Hollywood. What did you think of this movie and this premise?
So I love the premise, and I love, you know, any attention that we can give on stuntmen and the folks behind the scenes, the more the merrier. However, I kind of felt The Fall Guy fell short of my expectations.
Fell short.
I'm so sorry. the stunt set pieces are marvelous. I think Ryan Gosling knocks it out of the park. I mean, he's just so charismatic, and he really carries this movie effortlessly. But there's moments in between the explosions and, you know, his charming moments that felt kind of lackluster in comparison. And I kind of wish they would have given Emily Blunt a little bit more after she totally killed it in Oppenheimer.
I love her. And is there any chemistry between the two of them?
Oh, there's chemistry between them. But I think this is part of my issue with it. Like, the dialogue between them doesn't match the chemistry between them. Like, they have the physicality and the exchange looks, and that's perfect. But the words that are coming out of their mouth just aren't that funny. It's not, they kind of beat jokes to death, and like steam kind of runs out of different scenes, and you're like, oh, that's weird, you know, for an action movie to kind of feel slow. So I, you know, it's an okay time in the movies, but it wasn't the popcorn flick I was, you know, ready for.
Bibbs?
You know, I actually liked it a lot more than that. I see your point about you know, the dialogue. And I think for me, what I think is interesting and what I actually kind of like about The Fall Guy is that, unlike a lot of action movies where it's all about, like, you know, pumping up the stakes, this is actually like mostly a farce about Hollywood. And the gag is that we're just going to force this stunt guy to do all of these things, quote, in real life that he would normally only have to do for a movie. And I think that this really is just poking fun at the industry, and I think a lot of the things that make that, you know, sort of look silly and maybe take the air out of it are there on purpose. And we can argue that whether or not that works. I enjoyed that. I think the stunts in this movie are just absolutely incredible. Like, they knew that if you make a movie about a stunt person, it needs to have incredible stunts.
And who does his stunts, I guess I'm wondering.
You know, that's an excellent point, and I think maybe the movie should have credited the stunt people next to the actual people in the film. There's a line in the movie where someone asks, hey, do stunt people get Oscars? And Ryan Gosling has to say, no, we don't. And stunt people have been asking for an Academy Award for, I think, a couple of decades now, at least. And they're not getting the respect that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And I feel like The Fall Guy is specifically stunt people trying to make sure the mainstream knows that they risk their lives to give us the movies that we enjoy and that they deserve more credit and respect. And I think they do so with a certain amount of wit and humor. I guess mileage might vary about whether or not you think it's funny, but I had a blast. I think this is actually a really good action comedy.
It seems like Ryan Gosling's really embracing his inner himbo these days, or maybe outer himbo.
I'm here for that. Thank you. Here's the thing. He was great
yes,
before,
thank you.
And yet somehow he's found a new niche.
The Fall Guy, out in wide release. Next up, we have an A24 film called I Saw the TV Glow, a psychological thriller that follows two teenage friends obsessed with a television series called The Pink Opaque. But after the show is mysteriously canceled, their reality begins to blur.
Each episode, they help each other fight a new monster from across the county. But it's way too scary for most kids.
We're gonna defeat him this time. We're gonna need to harness the full potential of our shared powers.
Sometimes the Pink Opaque feels more real than real life.
Maddie, it was a TV show.
Are you sure that's all it was?
Bibs, this film has received a lot of praise for its trans filmmaker, Jane Schoenbrunn, who wrote and directed. What did you think?
I think Jane Schoenbrunn's last feature, We're All Going to the World's Fair, was the best movie of the year it came out. And while it is too early to make any such declarations about 2024, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the best film of 2024. I absolutely was hypnotized by I Saw the TV Glow. It stars Justice Smith and Bridget Lundy Payne as teenagers, and it's in the late 90s, and they're obsessed with this show much in the same way that my generation was obsessed with shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And about half the movie feels like a plausible dramatic tale about the way that people live vicariously through their art when they feel young and oppressed and they cannot express themselves. And then halfway through the film, there's a time jump and we catch up with them a few years later, and every single thing we've seen starts to be questioned, and the movie starts becoming a lot more surreal. This is rather obviously, I think, an allegory for the trans experience, but at the same time, it has a significant number of levels that run everything from metacritique to just any sort of coming of age story. I think this movie is relatable to anybody. But more than anything else, I feel that we're watching a filmmaker who is especially fascinated with the interests and the preoccupations of a generation whose interests and preoccupations have not necessarily been treated well by other filmmakers. It feels like we just keep getting shoved nostalgia. And this is a movie that is about watching TV in the 1990s, and it isn't nostalgic. It is pained and it is observant, and it has so much to say about the way that the millennials have been trained to view the world and how we use the media that we exposed to interpret that. I watched this movie and was just stunned. I think it's incredible.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Monica, did you have the same reaction? I'm assuming you are a millennial.
You are correct. I am a millennial.
Presumably.
Guilty as charged.
Presumably.
And I love this movie. Co-sign everything Will said. I saw this movie at Sundance, and I'm still thinking about it months later. It's just such an incredible world that you're immersed in. I also wanted to give cinematographer Eric Yu some attention, because he and Jane really create this fantastic realm. The TV show within the movie looks incredible and looks like of that time. The color palette that they're playing with is this beautiful jewel tone that glows and like captivates you, you know, no matter what's going on screen. So I was just fully on board, and gosh, the emotions of this movie. I don't think I've cried as hard yet this year so far as I have in this movie. It's such a credit to Jane and their storytelling that like really get you invested in these characters and just fully on board with what they're going through. And, I get chills thinking about this movie, and I loved rewatching it. I look forward to rewatching it again.
Okay, I saw the TV Glow in limited release now. Next, a new Japanese drama called Evil Does Not Exist. The film was written and directed by Oscar-winning filmmaker Ryusuke Hamaguchi, and here's a bit from the trailer. Okay, the film takes place in a peaceful rural village when real estate developers come to town and they announce their plan to open a glamping resort. Monica, the trailer says the film is basically a thriller about, quote, the violations of nature. So tell us more about this movie.
Absolutely. I think this movie, it won a number of awards at Venice when it premiered, and it's well-deserved. We'll probably be hearing a lot more of it over this year. It's just so immersive in that struggle, kind of explaining like the different ways that we affect each other as people without even thinking about it. Especially, you know, it's this talent agency that's trying to build a glamping resort in this rural community. And they have like a very frank conversation about how this incursion will affect everyone. You learn more about the characters, you get involved in their struggles, and even before that moment you learn more about the community itself, that you're already kind of, you know, on guard when these outsiders come in. But Hamaguchi takes it a step further and also introduces you to the world of the people who are representing this agency, where, you know, they think they're just doing their job and you get a little sympathy for them, but it's this beautiful exploration of the push-pull dynamic between the two groups. It is very much of a thriller, even though it is very meditative. And I do mean that. It's beautiful. You get to really see this rural area and you then get invested in this struggle because you don't want to lose that imagery, that visual, that nature, that's so precious to these people. So this is another movie that I think will reward on rewatch, but already on my first watch, I loved it. It's very masterful. It's very methodical in the way that it works through this narrative, but it's just so enchanting all the while.
Bibbs, this movie, Evil Does Not Exist, is by the same filmmaker who made Drive My Car, which was much lauded when it came out a few years ago. Also a very long movie,
yes.
I hasten to add.
Yeah. That's the point. Very beautiful. That is part of the point. Yeah.
So what did you think of this one?
Well, this isn't necessarily what we should be talking about, but if anyone saw Drive My Car and was like, oh God, 3 hours, that's a long movie. I don't know if I have the time for that. This movie is shorter. He doesn't only make 3 hour dramas about, you know, putting on Chekhov plays. This is a shorter film, but it is also a very measured film. There are scenes that go on longer than we might expect, particularly in Western cinema. But it is all about sort of increasing our ability to feel in this place. We are not being artificially led through the story. The story is unfolding very naturally. In fact, you know, even though it's the title makes it sound like a scary thriller, even though it's kind of being marketed as a thriller, huge chunks of this are about where we should place a septic tank. And I got to tell you something. I was wrapped. I was absolutely on the edge of my seat. They're going to move that septic tank, right? Like, they're going to move it. That will infect the groundwater. What are we doing here, people? Like, I'm getting completely immersed and sucked into the story, which is, much of it is about very, very subtle things. And then by the end of the film, which is incredible, and I had to, like, just sort of sit for, like, 20 minutes and think about it. It all added up to something a little unexpected for me. And I think that's great. I think this movie it lures you into the idea that this is the type of movie that we're in. And then I think it challenges your assumptions in a way that is masterful. Yeah, it's a brilliant film.
Evil Does Not Exist. It's now playing at the AMC at the Grove and in limited release elsewhere. Finally, a new animated film set in the 23rd century. It's called Mars Express. A detective is investigating the disappearance of his college-age daughter and her friend. And here's a bit from the trailer.
Both students disappeared. Could there be a common link?
This about the robot jailbreaking?
She tried to shut him off. The android's defending himself.
Deactivate!
In breach of Directive 1.
We found the android June hacked.
All right, Bibbs, I understand this movie was inspired by the popular manga series Ghost in the Shell. What did you think?
It definitely has Ghost in the Shell vibes. It definitely has Blade Runner vibes. It's science fiction about robots. It's part of a grand tradition. But I was actually really impressed with the way this film found its own personality and created its own world. It's co-written and directed by Jeremy Perrin, and it is about a detective named Aline who is living on Mars in the future. Earth is uninhabitable, and they live side by side with robots, but also a different sort of class of robots, which are people who died but downloaded their consciousness into a robot so that they could continue living. And over the course of the film, someone is jailbreaking robots, which is to say giving them free will and the ability to hurt humans if they want to. The story is complicated but easy to follow. The ideas are rich and deep, but they are presented naturally through the film as an extension of the story. The world that they have created is highly detailed and unusual, yet incredibly easy to get into and understand. And it concludes in a way that is both exciting and somewhat transcendent. I love this movie.
Oh my gosh, we're getting some really good movies this week. Monica, what did you think?
Yeah, it's a really good week at the movies. I also really enjoyed it. I was so wrapped up in the mystery of it all. The whole world building of it is really interesting. The fact that they are kind of addressing AI clones and what that kind of means and using AI to sort of sustain people's memory and presence on Earth, even though their physical form is no longer there, that gets really interesting and emotional. You know, for its short runtime, it's very powerful. And I was so entranced by the animation part of it and figuring out the different ways that this world is working while also solving the mystery alongside the detectives. It's really, really fun. It's really, really engrossing.
Mars Express in limited release beginning today. Monica Castillo, freelance film critic who writes for The New York Times, RogerEbert.com and The Village Voice, and William Bibbiani, film critic for The Wrap and co-host of the critically acclaimed network. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.